This is a recording of a demonstration in Hartford, Connecticut, against the United States government's invasion of Iraq. The two-part rally and march took place at the Capitol Building in Hartford on March 23, 2003. It was sponsored by Connecticut United Against War, a coalition of 35 peace groups from across the state. About 1,400 people gathered for this peace rally just a few days after the official beginning of the war. They met for a rally, then marched through parts of downtown Hartford, passing the city's federal building and the headquarters of United Technologies, finally returning to the Capitol building for a second rally. This is a recording of the speeches delivered at the event. The event was hosted by Richard Sherman and Bruce Rubenstein. The first person heard in this recording is Bruce Rubenstein. The featured speakers for Part 1 were Reverend Kathleen McTeague, minister of the Unitarian Society of New Haven; Mazim Kumsia, co-founder and currently the treasurer of Al-Auda, the Palestinian Right of Return Coalition; James Griffin, president of the Connecticut chapter of the NAACP; and Teresa Younger, executive director of the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union. The first part concludes with comments by Richard Sherman and Bruce Rubenstein, including an announcement of the march route.
Give yourselves a round of applause. There's a lot of people here today. Just a couple of housekeeping notes. We have 51 signed state representatives and state senators signed an anti-war resolution. 51. And, ladies and gentlemen, new poll came out in New Hampshire, and anti-war candidate Howard Dean is now tied with pro-war Democrats in New Hampshire. And, brothers and sisters and comrades, over 1 million people marched against this war yesterday. And, brothers and sisters, millions across the world marched yesterday. Now, an overview for today. We're going to have an invocation by Reverend Kathleen McTeague, who will be our first speaker. Then we're going to have Mr. Jim Griffin, state chair of the NAACP, and Mazim Kumsia, Palestinian Right of Return, speak, and we'll have our own Dave Brown perform a song, and then we're marching. So without further ado, Reverend Kathleen McTeague.
I know it's difficult to leave the sun and come in closer, but I'd like to invite you to come closer. If you gather near one another, you'll be a little warmer, too. If you can just come forward a little bit, we need to feel ourselves to be a community here.
That's going.
I was asked to begin with a prayer, and because I know that we are gathered here from many different faiths, I will expand that to say, please join me in the spirit of prayer and meditation. We hold in heart and mind today, with great sorrow, all of those who are now in harm's way. We hold in mind and heart the soldiers of our own country who are fighting in our name. Many of them are very young. They are very frightened. Some of them have already died. We hold in mind and heart the soldiers of Iraq. Many of them are men without a choice. They are also very frightened. Some of them have also already died. We hold in heart and mind especially the people of Iraq whose names and faces we will never know. They are very frightened. We hold in mind babies, toddlers, children, adolescents, mothers, fathers, old people who cannot run. Hold them in your hearts, cradle them in a place of peace. Let us pray and work for a speedy end to this war. Amen. I'm asked to speak representing the Connecticut Peace faith-based organization, Reclaiming the Prophetic Voice. And I wanted to begin with the words that inspired our choice of name for our organization. These words are taken from the great teacher and spiritual leader of the Jewish community, Abraham Joshua Heschel. Others have considered history from the point of view of power, judging its course in terms of victory and defeat, of wealth and success. But the prophets look at history from the point of view of justice, judging its course in terms of righteousness and corruption, of compassion and violence. They proclaimed that might is not supreme, that the sword is an abomination, that violence is obscene. I share those words with you as a reminder that in this work we are now about, this peacemaking, we are involved in a struggle that is not primarily political, but spiritual and moral. In addition to the pain that we have all been moving through in these past days, when we consider the people of Iraq, I'm sure that I am not alone in sometimes having moments of despair. We've felt a lot of things in these last days. Despair, also shame for what is being done in our name, moments of hopelessness because we worked so hard to try to prevent it, and deep anger at the lies and hypocrisy that have come to characterize our government. I will confess that I moved through much of yesterday in a cloud of anger. I was very angry, not just because of this war and the suffering that it's bringing, but because I read, as perhaps you did as well, that on Friday, our Congress, with barely a whimper, passed the enormous tax cut that President Bush has been asking for. As the bombs were falling on Iraq, Congress wrapped itself in the flag and in the name of patriotism passed over $6 billion in tax cuts that will go to the wealthy. I also read yesterday that the U.S. Agency for International Development has already begun choosing the elite American corporations that will be permitted to profit from rebuilding this nation that we are now destroying. One of those is a subsidiary of Halliburton, which was headed by Dick Cheney before he became vice president. There are many good reasons for our anger and our outrage. But anger and outrage are not the things that will sustain us during the long days and weeks and months that are ahead of us. It is time, I think, for us to know them and bow to them and let them go. We need to sink our roots more deeply than that. We need to sink our roots into the deep water flowing below the changes of the days and below all of the emotions that we will feel in order to be sustained as we need to be sustained for this work. Those deep waters are what have always been the trust of people of faith in every denomination, in every faith around this world. And I think that's where we need to turn today, to pull up for ourselves our clarity, our compassion, and our hope. We need our clarity in order to speak a different word in the face of dangerous, simplistic dualisms, good versus evil, patriot or traitor, with us or against us. This fragile, complex world of ours has never been drawn in those stark and simple lines, with good all on this side and evil all on that one. We know better. It's time to let go of that mythology. We know that there is only one human tribe across all of this earth, and that within each fragile, yearning heart of ours, there is the seed of great goodness and the capacity to visit unspeakable cruelty on each other. When we hear the language of lies, words like enemy combatant, we should say human being. Collateral damage, we should say human being. Peace through war, we should say, I don't think so. Our lives are inseparably linked across all of the barriers of culture and language and race, and we need to hold to the truth of that linkage as these days unfold. We need compassion in order to keep the seeds of war from taking root in our own hearts. It's by compassion that we will pull forward for ourselves real nonviolence and the true power that lies in nonviolence, the power that Gandhi knew, the power that Martin Luther King knew. There is nothing even remotely passive about it. It is a fierce energy of the heart that requires as much courage and discipline as what is needed by any soldier in the heat of battle. In the disciplines of nonviolence and compassion, we may not demonize those who oppose us. And by refusing that tendency to dehumanize and demonize, we begin to break the awful cycles of retribution and revenge by using our own bodies and minds and spirits to respond to violence by transforming it. All of our protest, all of our refusal of this war must be grounded in that compassion. And we need our hope. I have heard it said, despair is the spirituality of empire. Despair is the spirituality of empire. I believe that's true. Despair seeps in insidiously as we see the enormity of the empire that we oppose. And it is not an empire just of our government, even though many nations in the world now fear that. It is more secretive and more dangerous than that. It's the empire of capital. It's the empire that puts profit ahead of human life, ahead of all things moral, ahead even of the safety of the planet. If despair is the spirituality of empire, hope is the spirituality of resistance. While we were not able to avert this war and the suffering that it brings, we should not forget the new thing on the face of the earth that we have helped to bring about. For the first time in the short and difficult history of our species, all across the planet, we have been speaking by the millions for peace. And not only that, we have also been saying out loud in every language spoken on this planet that the time for settling our differences with war is over. The savagery and the slaughter that we visit on each other through war must become a thing of the past if we are going to have any future together at all. Our hope for that future lies right here. In all of us who are gathered together here, in all of the others who have gathered, are gathering now, and will gather again all across the face of this planet. Our hope lies here, in the commitment we draw from ourselves and from each other for the long and difficult and wholehearted work for peace. May it be so.
Thank you, Reverend McTeague. In an effort to support world peace, students at various high schools will be wearing white t-shirts to support world peace, and that will occur tomorrow, Monday, March 24th. Bruce?
Okay, brothers and sisters, next is Maseen Kumsaya from the Palestine Right of Return Coalition.
Thank you, thank you. Reverend McTeague had mentioned that millions around the world are marching and have done things. We should not be dispirited. I am very hopeful, actually. Why? Because you've already made a difference. If you didn't notice, Bush and company are very worried about public relations now. And because of that, you have already saved hundreds, perhaps thousands of Iraqi lives. So feel very proud of what you are doing. You have saved people. This child here is 4 years old. He was burned over 70% over his body by our bombs. And yet, there could have been hundreds like him. But Bush and company are very worried. Why are they worried? Because we are out here, and because we speak out. So continue to speak out, because you will limit this kind of thing from happening more and more. They are worried about us. So you continue. We will continue until there is no more killing. We will continue because over 90% of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction were destroyed by the inspectors, and only 10% or less were destroyed by our bombs in the first Gulf War. We will continue because, yes, some Iraqis later will come out and will see this change of regime from one dictator to another dictator, from Saddam to Bush, and they will say, yes, I can say I had weapons of mass destruction or I participated. That will not deter us, because it's just one hegemony from another hegemony. It doesn't help the world. As you know, it is not about weapons. It is not about weapons of mass destruction. The biggest weapon of mass destruction is produced by our government, by the U.S., and it has killed 1.5 million Iraqis. And we will continue to kill more Iraqis with our weapons of mass destruction, like those 2,000 mother-of-all bombs that we are dropping on the Iraqis now. It is about business. It is about money. It is, in fact, about Cheney and Halliburton, as one of the signs there says. It is about Rumsfeld, and it is about Pearl and Wolfowitz and people who are after power. In fact, a strand of thought have developed due to the monopoly of the special interests in our government. And Professor Edward Said described it as follows. What we have, therefore, is a strand of thought that has little place in it for issues relating to power or financial gain or resource grabbing or ethnic lobbying or forcible and or surreptitious regime change, as we did in Iran and Chile, for instance. Still, less represented or even alluded to are policies of extraordinary cruelty or insidiousness in which America is directly responsible, like support for the Sharonian campaign against Palestinian civilian life, or the terrible civilian casualties incurred on Iraq by Iraqi sanctions, or the support given the Turkish and Colombian regimes for horrendous inhuman punishment against ordinary citizens. These are considered out of bounds during serious discussions of quote-unquote policy that we see over the networks. It is now clearly evident, by the way, that from their own documents that those in power have intended this all along. This was no accident. This didn't come about suddenly. Please read documents. Go, for example, on a webpage called IsraelEconomy.org and read the document that was issued, chaired by Richard Perle and submitted to Netanyahu, that called for the war in Iraq In 1996, the document is titled Securing the Realm. The idea was that we are going to secure this realm of hegemony of Israel and the U.S. power in the Middle East for oil, for our interests, for the military interests, not for democracy or for justice or for peace or for equality. How else is one to explain that those people have met yesterday in essentially a celebration party? A celebration party, basically. They had a panel discussion with Pearl and Wolfowitz on it yesterday, and they are talking about how Iran and Syria are next. Iran and Syria are next. Well, who's next? Well, they are talking now also about containment of who? France and Germany. They want to contain France and Germany. I have news for them. The world cannot be contained. The world cannot be contained. All right? All empires go through this phase of thinking that they can manage the world. No, the world cannot be managed. The world is a very complex place, and it has good people. It has, all of us have impulses that are negative, which we need to control. And the first evil that we have to control is the evil within our own hearts. That's the first thing we have to do. I'm not a Muslim, but in Islam it says that there are people who are evil and who are planning things. They plan and God plans, but God is the best of planners. In Islam, it also says that basically God will not change a people unless they decide to change themselves. So God is not going to micromanage this world. God lets us do what we need to do to fix this world. And as such, I encourage you, that's what we are doing here. That's what we are doing here. We're getting together as people of all nationalities, of all religions, of all ethnicities, and saying we can make this world much better than this. We can do better than this. We are better than this interest, special interests, and money, and business, and oil, and all of this. We can make this world a better place. So they talk about A Day for Air Day and G Day for Ground Day. And I can tell them, let's talk about P Day for People's Day. People's Day. Okay? And this is People's Day, and we ought to do that. So what I say is across, in fact, I'm convinced that it had not been for People's Day, for people's work, this would have been much, much worse. And so we must increase the pressure. We must build this movement. We must coordinate. We must demonstrate in front of the media, which is silencing these images that I showed you. So I say no to war, yes to peace, no to violence, yes to justice, no to Zionism, yes to Judaism, no to Israeli apartheid, yes to a pluralistic, free Palestine and Israel. And I say, save the earth, think green, work for peace, establish justice, stop the war, stop the war, stop the war! Thank you.
Hey, let's make some noise. What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Next, we have Jim Griffin, State Chair of the NAACP. Jim?
Good afternoon. I stand before you as a Vietnam veteran. Remember Vietnam. Remember Vietnam. I want you to repeat after me if you can. I have a few words. Our most wanted dreams we express with hopes it's non-violent peace we get. The mountains we speak from are very high. Around the world they hear our cry. Stop the war! Stop the war! Stop the killing! Stop the destruction! I've come here today to express my disappointment and dismay of our membership from the Connecticut State Conference of NAACP. We from the African American communities across the state and know well what this administration has done by distracting you away from the issues that impact us. We know what it's like to fight for freedom only to be denied equal rights. The war must be not fought in Iraq, it should be fought in America, in the American streets. Our young people are killing each other all over. We are ignoring the drugs that have poisoned our children's minds. We are watching our senior citizens make choices between prescription drugs or their next meal. We are shortchanging our educational system, and our children are coming out of school not able to read. And more of them are going to jail instead of going to college. We have to stop this war and bring our troops home before we face an international bloodbath of human beings across the globe. Stop killing. Stop the war. Save our children and fight no more. And I'll end with a scripture, a quote from the Bible. Solomon prayed to God in Chronicles 7:14, "If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and forgive their sin and will heal their land." Thank you.
Now, next speaker is battling the Patriot Act and the coming Patriot Act too. I give to you Teresa Younger, Executive Director of the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union.
I'm not going to say I'm happy to be here today, because I'm not. And in fact, this morning, as I was watching the atrocities on TV with my husband, it made it even more so that I needed to be here today, not that I wanted to be here today. When I took this job 18 months ago, I could have never assumed the state of the world we are in today. And the threat on civil liberties is on high alert. It is on high alert. You will all recall the passage of the USA Patriot Act, the uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism, the USA Patriot Act. And in that act, they go so far as to create a new crime of domestic terrorism, so broad as to include activities that we would not consider terrorist activities. It goes so far as to allow the Secretary of State to declare any organization, domestic or foreign, a terrorist organization. It goes so far far as to allow the FBI and the government to walk into your home, wiretap your phone, monitor what is being done on your computer, and leave without telling you about it. It goes so far as to allow the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to hold secret courts and to make the determination as to when and how they will monitor your communications. It goes so far as to no longer wiretap your phone, but to wiretap you as an individual and every phone that you use. It goes so far as to allow for third-party information to be shared, which means the FBI and the government can monitor what books you buy, what books you check out from the library, and what you do on your computer. This is a scary time for civil liberties. This is a war on civil liberties just as much as it is a war on anything else right now. And it's not just legislation like the USA Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, or the secret introduction of the USA Patriot Act 2 that we need to be concerned about. It's the silencing of America. It's the words of Ashcroft when he says, "You are aiding and abetting the terrorists if you are talking or speaking up about the state of the world today." That's a problem in America. In a world that becomes even smaller, we must ask the question, can war and justice live together on the same planet? On a planet where everyone is our neighbor, we must ask the question, can war and liberty coexist? War has always prevailed over individual liberties whenever they have clashed. And fortunately, due to the protection of the First Amendment, they have always clashed. Free speech and open inquiry of unfriendly companions to war. They allow us to ask questions that undermine the unanimous will that is so essential in using violence as a preference to the instrument of policy. Individual privacy is no friend to war, because the need for privacy is so often taken as the war's architect as a haven to being disloyal. The right to counsel and the presumption of innocence are always casualties of war, because the quest for the enemy in our ranks is seen as worth of groundless convictions of the few innocent bystanders. And so when Congress passed USA Patriot Act in haste after the horrors of 9/11, it was not surprising that the goals of this law were not patriotism at all, but an instrument to strip away the fundamental freedoms in the name of the war on terrorism. This law and new bills in the pipeline will not keep us safe. They will not keep us free. And so the willingness to trade freedom for safety is a sham, and it is a dangerous one.
Hear, hear! Yes!
Many of the same technologies that enable a smart war allow government to pry into our private lives, to gather unimaginable amounts of personal information on Americans that have little or nothing to do with national security. We must remain free and safe, and individual liberty is essential to security and freedom. Lasting unity thrives in freedom and justice, not war, and not the brand of patriotism that exalts the strength of arms and not the strength of will. Achieving peace has always been hard work, and even harder now, and will continue to be harder. Let us resolve to hoist the Constitution and the Bill of Rights into the air as a guide and a signal of who we are, as individuals, as people. Let us make the principles of liberty, not the engines of war, the continuing gift we want the world to see. Now more than ever before, freedom and war cannot live on this tiny planet together. The choices are yours, and they are now for you to make. I want to conclude by saying, if you haven't taken a stand to protect and defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, those rights that allow us to come together today, you need to do so. Contact the ACLU. We will give you a petition to have your city and local town councils stand up and protect the Bill of Rights. I will just say this. On Friday, I contacted the FBI, the Office of Homeland Security. I asked, if we go to code red in this country, in this state, what does it mean? And we should all be terrified, because I was told, government as we know it now will cease to exist if we go to code red in this country. That's a problem. We need to speak up. We need to have our voices heard. We need to make sure that we are active. We need to build a better world for tomorrow. We need to protect and defend the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, and we can only do it when people come together and raise their voices. Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa. Teresa has raised a lot of serious questions. Not all of them can be answered right away. But I think there's one question we could answer right now. What does democracy look like? This is what democracy looks like. What does democracy look like? This is what democracy looks like. What does democracy look like?
Give yourself a round of applause. And brothers and sisters, comrades, now we're going to march. There is a Connecticut United for Peace banner on the right, which we want you to congregate. We are going to be marching. We're going to be coming back for the second part of this demonstration. So you all come on back. And for those of you that can't march for one reason or another, there will be stuff going on around here, like poetry, music, and other speakers. And we will have peacekeepers. So everybody, mind the peacekeepers. We are marching past the federal building. We are marching past United Technologies. We're going around the perimeter of Bushnell Park. And we're all coming back here for the second part of the demonstration.